Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrn Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed. What do false memories of childhood abuse and companion animals have in common? That's sort of what I was thinking when I read a review of a book entitled My Lie, A True Story of False Memory by Meredith Moran. Moran tells the tragic story of having falsely accused her father of molesting her, thanks to therapy that enabled her to recover this false childhood memory. And she goes on to explore how this happened and the effect that it had on her, and most certainly had on her relationship with her father. One of the things that was mentioned in this review was a comment that occurred in the Dear Emma blog in the Connecticut Post about false memories and the problems with false memories. The blog mentioned that any therapist should pay attention to any adult's memories of childhood abuse, but pointed out that therapists should also remember that every one of us, quote, craves a big, flaming explanation for our suffering. So what does this have to do with companion animals? Well, it turns out that sometimes we crave a big, flaming explanation to our animal suffering, or maybe the suffering that our animals cause us, whether the animal is actually suffering or not. And it seems to me that this has become even more of an issue with the evolution of the rescue culture. We have more and more animals who are being marketed as having come from abusive backgrounds, often with little or no history to support that. And just the thought that the animal has been abused changes our relationship with that animal. I mentioned that this has evolved with the rescue culture, but it's always been there to some extent. In the past, the most common form of this was the obesity that was, quote, caused, unquote, by the animals having been spayed or neutered. There were people who were willing to swear on a stack of Bibles that their animals were perfectly spelt until they had that surgery. And then once they had that surgery, they just packed on the pounds. What was interesting about this, and very similar to the later manifestation of this phenomenon, was that these people never seemed to make the connection that they were their animal's only source of food. They had full control over how much their animal ate. Consequently, if their animal was eating too much for the amount of exercise that animal was given, logic reasonably said that this was because they were feeding too much, but that it was the surgery that caused the increased weight was very real to these people. With animals who have experienced what people choose to perceive as some sort of emotional trauma, the cause many times isn't clear at all. There may be a period when nothing is known about what the animal experienced. This can be life prior to the animal was picked up as a stray, or prior to when the animal got into the transport system in which young animals are taken away from their mothers and spayed, neutered, transported all over the country to different facilities and put up for adoption. Or it may be a situation in which a purebred animal is shipped. Who knows what happened at the airport? Who knows what happened in quarantine? But the tendency is to take that event, that unknown, and perceive it as a reason or an excuse for anything that is perceived wrong with the animal afterwards. This becomes the reference point. One of the problems with picking negative reference points is that if we perceive ourselves as compassionate people, which I think animal lovers do, and most certainly when they get a new animal, they really want that animal, they want to do good by that animal. And if we choose a negative reference point, we're more likely to make excuses for the problem instead of resolving it. And that's really unfortunate, because it puts the animal at a disadvantage and it puts us at a disadvantage. And the worst thing about negative reference points is that they tend to attract negativity to them. So let's say, for example, that I assumed that one of my dogs was severely abused before I got her. Let's say I perceived the place where I got Frick as a complete hellhole. I could use that as the reason, as the excuse for any medical problem she had, any behavioral problem she had, any problem she had. And once I did that, naturally I would want to be right. Consequently, then, I would be on the lookout. I would be on the lookout for things that reinforce that belief. Rather than seeing all the good things about her, I would zero in on the negative things about her. And in the process of doing that, I would create a reality. I would get what I wanted. I would have a pet that proved that I was right. But in the process of doing that, I would create an animal whose behavior and or health was less than it would have been if I had taken a different approach. So yes, we all do want a big flaming reason for our sufferings and a big flaming reason for our animal sufferings, but we need to be careful. We need to be careful that our desire to project the responsibility away from ourselves isn't so great that it causes us to summon false memories that we later regret.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore, by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.